You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
I was 12 years old, and I remember my dad woke me up at like 12 o'clock as the game was about to start.
June 17th, 2002. Mexico was about to play a round of 16 World Cup match in Jeonju, South Korea. It was the middle of the day there, but the middle of the night in the Western Hemisphere. So Mexico fans like Danny Ramirez were up in the wee hours to watch the game.
We walk outside, and literally every Mexican house on our block had the lights on. It was midnight, but it felt like it was noon. Like everyone was excited for this.
Danny and his family were living in a suburb of LA. Across the country in New York, Rigo Ayala's family was also awake.
I remember my father, my brother, and I, we were up at like 2, 3 in the morning watching the game because it was over in Korea.
Leon Krause was in Mexico City.
My parents, my brother, and myself gather around the TV. That day we did not go to sleep. It was impossible to sleep.
Ask any Mexico fan where they were when this game was played, and they'll remember. Everybody remembers this game. Omar Loaiza was living in El Paso, Texas. But that night, he got in his car and headed south to watch the game.
We crossed the border to Mexico. We had like all these friends in Mexico, and they invited us to a rooftop in Ciudad Juarez.
Omar and all the other Mexico fans couldn't imagine sleeping through this match. Because this year, 2002, was Mexico's year. World Cup glory had eluded Mexico for decades. They'd played in nearly every tournament since 1930 and had never even come close to winning. But this year, they had the team they'd been waiting for. And if they could win this round of 16 game, they might just go all the way. Mexico fans were also keyed into this game because of their opponent, the United States. In Mexico, the U.S. is sometimes known as El Gigante al Norte, the giant to the north. But on the soccer field, Mexico was the giant, a fact that Mexico fans relished. Here's Leon Krause.
Of course, that was at play and has always been at play when Mexico plays the United States because the Americans are so powerful, just in general, right? And this was, and still is, we believe, our game.
Mexico and the United States. Two countries who faced each other so many times over the years, but never on an occasion as significant as this one.
Today we revisit this unforgettable game, which sparked one of the most bitter rivalries in soccer. From Gimlet Media, I'm Nando Vila, and on this episode of We Came to Win, Mexico came to win. To better understand this 2002 Mexico-US game, we asked Leon Krause to relive it with us. He's a TV anchor in Los Angeles and a huge fan of Mexican soccer. He's even written 3 books on the subject. Leon said that while they waited for the game to start that night, he and his family grew increasingly anxious.
We had dinner. We just remember having a conversation, letting the time pass. And you get nervous.
Just past 1 a.m. in Mexico City, Leon and his family settled into the living room to watch the match. On the TV, the players lined up on the field, squinting in the hot sun. It was 3:30 in the afternoon in Jeonju, South Korea. The Mexican anthem swelled over the speakers, and the camera zoomed in on the team. Fans watching at home could even hear the players singing along as the camera swept from face to face. This was the team they'd waited for through so many years of frustration. Star forward Cuauhtémoc Blanco, who was so tricky and skillful with the ball, stood on the end. And then there was Ramon Morales, the tiny midfielder who barely looked his 26 years. And then the captain, Rafa Márquez, who may just be the best Mexican player of all time. He was a graceful, elegant center back.
He has the whole field within his brain, and he's capable of reading it with a talent that is unparalleled in Mexican soccer history.
But Márquez did have a bit of a mean streak, sometimes violently lashing out at his opponents.
He has a temper. He certainly has a temper, and he has been sent off at inopportune moments in his career.
On this day, Márquez and the rest of the team looked focused and ready to start the game. Mexico was coming off of a fantastic group stage, where they topped Croatia, Ecuador, and Italy. And they were the overwhelming favorites to win this match.
They have some talented players, the Mexicans.
A few yards away stood the American team. People were surprised they had made it this far in the tournament. In the last World Cup, the U.S. had crashed out in the first round, losing every game and only scoring a single goal. Some of that team was back on the field for this match. Midfielder Claudio Reyna, the captain, looked serious, gazing out across the field. 20-year-old Landon Donovan was new to the team and still had a hint of baby fat in his face. Brian McBride, one of the veterans, looked like he was melting in the hot Korean sun before the game had even kicked off. These were all solid players, but let's be honest, Mexico was the better team.
Honestly, when you compare Reyna with our more technically gifted players, there really was no comparison in talent and potential.
And while Leon might be a little biased, the U.S. really wasn't considered a contender in the World Cup.
There was a sense that the soccer in the United States was growing. But, you know, a World Cup stage is a different thing. And I was very confident that we were going to come out on top.
Just to underline that about the Mexicans, they've not lost now for almost a year. Colombia, the last team to beat them, virtually 12 months ago.
In other games this World Cup, it had been a struggle to fill seats. But with Mexico playing, the stadium was packed, fans chanting, faces painted red, white, and green for the Mexican flag. Sombreros, El Tri jerseys, and flowing blonde wigs to emulate the Mexican forward Luis Hernandez. The sound in the stadium was deafening. At last, the game kicked off.
Let's hope we get a goal or two in this one today. Mexico against the United States of America.
Right from the start, Mexico took control of the ball. For the first several minutes, they passed it around the American players, who were unable to really gain possession.
The United States are not keeping hold of the ball for very long at all.
The U.S. couldn't string two passes together. In the fifth minute, American goalkeeper Brad Friedel went to clear a ball and nearly kicked it off defender Eddie Pope's back. A couple inches closer, and the ball might have ricocheted back into the U.S.'s own goal.
Yeah, Brad Friedel's just saying there to Eddie Pope, you should have just left that one to me.
Mexico were really putting the pressure on early, and the U.S. looked a little shaky.
Arena trying to get his players just to calm down a bit. Maybe they're just a little bit too excitable at the moment. Understandable.
8 minutes into the game, the U.S. was awarded a seemingly innocuous free kick in midfield.
A lot of free kicks in these early minutes.
Before Mexico realized what was happening, American captain Claudio Reyna charged down the right flank and crossed the ball into the box. Josh Wolf passed it back to Brian McBride, who buried the shot.
Goal for the United States of America, Brian McBride.
I mean, the Mexican players were absolutely caught off guard, distracted. I mean, it was just excruciating to watch.
There's an expression in Spanish, un jarro de agua fría, a bucket of cold water. And that's what this goal was, a wake-up call. For the first time, a Mexico victory no longer felt like a lock. What was the reaction?
I don't know if I want to keep talking about this. Well, it was horrible. There are two kinds of goals that can be definitive in a soccer match. The one that falls very early in the game and the one that falls just when the half is about to end, right? And this was the former.
They were actually only down one goal, but Mexico fans began to feel a sense of panic. For as long as anyone could remember, the Mexico team had been disappointing its fans by getting so close and then blowing it all at the last minute. Like in 1994, in the round of 16 match, when they lost in penalties to Bulgaria.
We faced Bulgaria in a match that we should have won, and that was, I mean, terrible.
And then, in 1998, in the round of 16 again, they were up 1-0 against Germany. And then Germany scored twice in the last 20 minutes to knock them out.
We should have won that game as well.
In the many World Cups they'd played in, Mexico had only ever won one knockout game. It seemed like a mental block. So for fans watching them play in this game against the United States, a familiar sense of dread began to creep in. But they still had almost the whole game left to play. So the players and the fans tried to push any memories of these past losses out of their minds. They needed to focus. For 20 minutes, Mexico surrounded the U.S. box, trying to poke holes in the defense from every direction. But it seemed impenetrable.
Okay, he's just getting forward a lot for the Mexicans today. Well, they've not been able to use their wide men as well as they would like.
And then Mexico's coach, Javier Aguirre, had an idea.
Mexico are going to make a switch here already.
Leon broke it down for us.
So Aguirre made a very strange decision. I mean, he was very clearly... the match had gotten to his head, and he made a very strange decision. He took out a very talented midfielder that the Mexican team had, Ramon Morales, and sent in like a third forward, Luis Hernandez.
Swapping Morales for Hernandez was supposed to strengthen the attack. They'd lose a creative midfielder, but they would gain someone who could put the ball in the back of the net.
And it was, you know, it was an experiment in the middle of a World Cup.
And the experiment was pretty risky. It's almost unheard of for a coach to make a substitution in the first half. You can only make three substitutions total, and it seemed like Aguirre was abandoning his game plan early.
And it was a disaster. I mean, a complete disaster. He overreacted. He made a substitution, changed the shape of the team to a shape that they had never really played with. And instead of helping, he made things worse.
This is a classic case of un ataque de entrenador, which translates to a fit of coaching. He overcoached, and the results were not good for his team. Without that extra midfielder, Mexico wasn't able to hold possession of the ball as comfortably as before. They lost fluidity and played a little bit more frantically. It gave the U.S. more confidence to launch counterattack.
Okay, but that's half time. The first half has gone to the United States of America, an early goal.
Back in Mexico City, crowded into the living room with his family, Leon didn't know what to think about what was happening. It was 2:15 a.m., and they were headed into halftime with the U.S. up 1-0. Every Mexico fan wondered how the team would climb out of the hole they'd dug themselves into. After the break, another goal, one of the most egregious fouls in World Cup history, and the origins of an epic rivalry that endures to this day.
The second half is ready to begin.
As the second half of the Mexico-U.S. round of 16 match kicked off, Mexico again threw everything at their opponent. Coach Javier Aguirre made another substitution at halftime. He took off Manuel Vidrio, a defender, for Sigifredo Mercado, a midfielder. But that didn't seem to make a difference. In the 51st minute, Braulio Luna smacked a free kick towards goal.
Mexico looked for the equalizer!
But it just hit the post. 2 minutes after that, Mexico hoofed the ball into the box, only to have American midfielder John O'Brien clear it with his fist.
Well, it appears to me that there was a fist used there. I reckon that was O'Brien.
On the sideline, Mexico coach Javier Aguirre pleaded with the referee to call a penalty for handball, but no penalty was given. It seemed like nothing was working in Mexico's favor.
Mexico just kept hitting this wall I mean, Mexico had tried everything. Mexico had tried everything.
In the first half, Blanco's corner now for Mexico. Still, it won't fall kindly for them.
And then, disaster. John O'Brien delivered a perfect ball to the run of Eddie Lewis down the left-hand side. Lewis took the pass in stride and crossed the ball into the box toward the on-rushing Landon Donovan, who had his arm raised, begging for the ball.
Lewis, and there's a man in the middle coming here. This could be the killer moment for the United States of America.
Donovan just managed to get his head on it, and the ball flew into the goal.
Landon Donovan arrived in the penalty box. The celebrations are all red and blue and white, and the United States of America on a breakaway here have scored their second.
Leon was absolutely crushed, but he couldn't help admiring the goal.
Donovan, you know, just lunging and diving towards the ball with a sort of huevos, no, with a sort of cojones balls that you need, man, to play in a World Cup.
2-0 they lead.
And after that, it was just pure, pure torture.
With 25 minutes left in the game, the score now stood at 2-0.
The American team started enjoying and we started realizing that they were about to get the most fantastic victory in the history of American soccer.
Well, you can hear the chants for the USA now.
In the stands, the American fans were having their own fun.
Taunting the Mexicans a little bit, completely justifiable, the way they behaved, you know, because after years of defeats, of listening to el tri esto, the tri aquello, blah, 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 the Mexican wave, ole, 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 and cielito lindo and whatnot, I mean, they must have been really enjoying the game, man.
Did you have any hopes for a potential miraculous comeback?
No, not at all, because the dominance had been quite complete. And by then, I think it was also had already become a mental game.
When Leon says mental game, he means the game had gotten into the Mexican players' heads. They started fighting smaller battles rather than the larger war, arguing with each other, insulting the American players, and questioning the refs over inconsequential calls. Instead of playing their opponents, they were playing against their own frustration, the pressure of the game, and the weight of history. This kind of thing can happen with teams that know each other so well.
I mean, this was not just two teams that had never met. It was the Americans. And, it was... by then, the story was already told.
But one Mexican player wouldn't let the United States have the last word.
It's amazing that we've had 10 yellows and no reds.
In the 88th minute, a looping ball came toward American player Kobe Jones. He jumped up to head the ball, and out of nowhere, the Mexican captain, Rafa Márquez, came at him while he was in the air. What happened next was almost hard to believe. Márquez ninja-kicked Jones in the back and headbutted him at the same time.
But Márquez sent off, clattering into Kobe Jones, a really dangerous, cowardly challenge.
It looked like a move closer to something you'd see in WWE than on a soccer field. Jones thudded to the ground, and the ref flashed his red card at Rafa Márquez.
He's going to get a red, and that really does sum up Mexico's day. Their captain is red-carded, not for the first time in his career.
Well, you know, it was like a culmination of a nightmare, because to see Márquez lose it like that was excruciating and unnecessary as well, because one also has to learn how to deal with defeat. It was just the wrong thing to do, but I understand Rafa Márquez.
The American fans were gleeful as they watched Márquez leave the field. 7 minutes later, the ref blew the final whistle.
Dejection for Mexico, who promised much and didn't deliver.
The score was USA 2, Mexico 0. 2-0. The Mexican players trudged off the field, their expressions a mix of anguish and shock. Fans watching at home, if they hadn't already turned their TVs off, saw the camera shots sweep across the crowd, zooming in on individual Mexico fans. expressions blank. The blonde wigs and festive face paint suddenly sad and garish in the light of defeat. Mexico fans have become accustomed to this pattern. Hope, promise, and inevitable failure. And back at home in Mexico City, León's family had their own familiar routine.
The conversation is the same one we've had time and time again. My father begins the conversation by saying, "This is a lesson for all of us. We should not put our happiness in the hands of others. We should tomorrow wake up and keep working at what we do and just try to obtain happiness through our own efforts. No debemos confiarle nuestra felicidad al trabajo de otros, no? We should not entrust our happiness to others." And we all say, "Yes, Dad, you're right. It's just a game. And they did their best, but, I mean, blah, 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 blah." But in the end, it's just very painful every single time.
The morning after the game, Mexico fans woke up, hearts heavy, anger throbbing, the sting of defeat still fresh. They felt it in New York.
Every single Mexico loss in the World Cup has been devastating, but this one just took the cake.
And Los Angeles.
It's like everyone's grandma had just died.
And in Mexico City.
The next morning, you know, I remember I took my brother to a club where we used to play and basically played soccer for hours. I remember being just completely soaked and exhausted. It was very hot. It's like I needed to exercise that. It's like I needed to exercise, you know, that damn game through the ball, through playing soccer, through sweating and kicking the ball and playing soccer myself. It was like an exorcism.
But the usual reckoning wasn't enough. Because this time, they hadn't just lost. They'd lost to the United States. The one team they didn't want to lose to. The thing that Mexico had over the U.S. suddenly had been ripped away from them.
Well, I mean, for American soccer, and it was a complete before and after. I mean, a breakthrough in the biggest stage imaginable. I mean, I think it was the beginning of a great rivalry.
Mexico had gained a new rival, and they hadn't even seen it coming. They knew they needed to get revenge.
I always say that if we want to get revenge from that 2002 defeat, that 2-0, we need to do it in the same stage. We need to face the Americans in the World Cup, and we need to beat the Americans in the World Cup.
But the World Cup only happens every 4 years, and there's no guarantee that any two teams will face each other. In fact, it could be generations before Mexico and the United States face off in another World Cup game.
So for Mexico, that defeat in South Korea is in many ways the unavengeable loss. It's like losing the girl of your dreams, no? Will you ever get another girl of your dreams? No, you will never get another girl of your dreams. There's just one girl of your dreams.
It's been 16 years since that 2002 game, and Mexico is still waiting for their chance. But in that time, the rivalry between Mexico and the U.S. has played out on smaller stages. They've played each other 20 times since 2002, and 5 out of the 8 U.S. wins over Mexico have ended with the exact same score, 2-0.
It gave them this theme of the 2-0 that then for a long time became a score that horribly for us, magically for you, just repeated itself time and time again.
It's 2-0 again!
Otra vez el fantasma del 2-0!
2-0 once again!
Mexico fans are haunted by that score of 2-0. Sports journalists invariably mention it when they write about the two teams, and U.S. fans chant it at the games.
And when you have a narrative, then you have, well, naturally, you have a story. And when you have a story to tell, passion evolves and develops. And that's what happened with American soccer and Mexican soccer. And I think it was for the better, because the rivalry has given us great games, great like personal rivalries, great stories, great villains from both sides.
And the rivalry has an added dimension for the millions of people of Mexican origin who live in the United States. For them, the Mexican national team represents a tie back to their homeland, their roots. Here's Danny Ramirez.
And just growing up with that, like, passion from my family, from my dad, from my mom, like, there's no way I was going to root for the U.S. It's in my DNA.
Rigo Ayala.
This is ingrained from, like, birth. I have pictures of being, like, an infant with soccer jerseys on. Mexican soccer is all I know.
The two sides won't meet this year in the World Cup because the U.S. failed to qualify. But Mexico will be there. And fans will once again gather on couches in their living rooms, eyes glued to the screens, as their team tries to battle out of the group stage, past the knockout games, all the way to the final.
The only thing is, man, I wish that that one day I could jump to the part in which we enjoy the bliss of winning. If we could just fast forward to that.
Our starting producers are Emma Morgenstern, Gofanin Putubuele, and Emily Ulbricht. Our super subs are Anna Foley and Jasmine Romero. Our captain is senior producer Matt Nelson. He's tough, but he almost never headbutts me out of frustration. And our coaches would never make a sub in the first half. They are editors Caitlin Kenny, Devin Taylor, and Jessica Weisberg. Sound design, scoring, and mixing by Bobby Lord. Our fact checker is referee Max Gibson. Special thanks to Jorge Estrada and Victoria Barner. For this episode, we actually got Mexico and USA fans together to rewatch the 2-0 game. So I'd like to thank everyone who came to that event, including the fans you heard from in this episode. Next week, we're bringing you an interview with former U.S. men's national team stalwart Jimmy Conrad. He's going to talk about his epic performance coming off the bench in the 2006 World Cup game against Italy. And then in 2 weeks, we'll talk about the most infamous referee in World Cup history, Byron Moreno, and why he still provokes reactions like this.
If I have to be explicit, it was like a shitty asshole. It was like the worst ref that I never seen in my life.
He makes such crazy call against Italy.
We were probably the best team ever since 200 years, and we just lost because of him.
We Came to Win is a production of Gimlet Media in association with Fusion. If you like the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. For photos and bonus content, follow Gimlet Media on Twitter. The handle is @GimletMedia. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show, so use the hashtag #WeCameToWin and tell us what you think.